Are you ready? Luca?
I'm not ready.
You're not ready. Okay, that's okay. Say Luca Brasi.
I really don't know how to say Brasi.
You just said it. That was perfect. You said it perfectly.
Luca Broxley sleeps with the fishes.
Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey Mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Sarah Stefanelli.
And I'm Joseph Stefanelli. We will be taking you through The Sopranos one episode at a time, one podcast episode at a time.
Today we'll be discussing the season two finale, Funhouse.
Did you like this episode?
Can you tell I'm excited? I think it's the best hour of television that exists.
So we've watched 26 episodes. This is number one for you?
Right now it has to be. Even Knight in White Satin Armor was very good. And we were like, yeah, that's top five. And then like, so is the season finale. I don't know, man. I think this blows it out of the water.
Wow.
This is incredible.
Yeah, it is. It is. Listen, I love it too. And I was reminded as I watched it. I was shocked because we watch it through such a different lens than all the other times that I've seen it and you've seen it.
This time is certainly different for you, at least. I mean, this is only my second time through, but I was literally nervous. I had a stomach ache when they were getting on the boat.
Did you say you text me you were ready to vomit?
I was like, I feel like I'm going to puke. Because I'm so nervous. Go ahead, read your ep summary. Because I got a lot to say.
After allegedly getting food poisoning, Tony enters the fun house that is his psyche. While there, he experiences a plethora of fun that never stops. But most importantly, finally addresses his longtime suspicion of Pussy working with the FBI. After proving to himself by finding recording devices at Pussy's house, Tony, joined by Silvio and Paulie, bring Pussy out on a boat, confront him, get his confession, and execute their friend, leaving him buried at sea. Meanwhile, with Janice gone, Barbara and Tony need to figure out what to do with Livia. Tony decides to send her to Tucson using the stolen airline tickets from the Scatino bust out, leading the FBI right to Tony on the night before Meadows' high school graduation. This episode aired on April 9th in the year 2000.
Wow.
It almost seems silly to have the meanwhile. But it is an important plot point. But
oh, I know. And you know what, too? The big moment, Pussy's death, happens in the middle of the episode. It's not the end.
I made note of that, too. You always think it's the end, but there's so much more after.
There's more that happens. That's why I think that we keep thinking, okay, Funhouse, Pussy's death, Funhouse, Pussy's death. And listeners, I think half of our cannolis up to this point have been pointing to Pussy dying. A high percentage, right?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
So you think it's this final thing, and then you're like, no, there's more to this episode. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, in the first episode that we did together, we talked about him saying Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. I mean, not only do they use fish as an homage to that, but let's face it, Vincent Pastore looks like the guy who played Luca Brasi.
He does.
Wait, Louis Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
Luca Brasi. Luca.
Whatever.
And that's all a coincidence, don't forget. Because Pussy was not supposed to come back after season one.
Right.
The fans demanded it, and he wrote this amazing story for this actor. And we will talk later about the Emmy Awards that year, because again, the Academy did them dirty. Do you want to talk about anything else before we get to it? I mean, you just want to jump in?
We will absolutely get to everything, I promise. I think we dive in.
So I think this is the first time we agree on favorite scene. 26 episodes.
Listen, it has to be the boat. It has to be Pussy's death. And you know what, too? I didn't enjoy it, but it was still my favorite scene. Yeah. It has to be.
It's one of the most beautiful scenes the series ever had.
It is so full of emotion. I think that's why I like this episode, if we're going to compare it to the penultimate episode. I think the feelings and the nostalgia, I think all of it kind of catered to more of my personality. I think this episode is incredible. So why is this your favorite scene?
Well, I think it's the same of what you're saying. And kind of to piggyback on what you said, it's when you go to white satin armor, it's kind of emotionless. I mean, the murder of Richie is, you know, you think it's because she's so emotional, but she doesn't even have time to have an emotion. And it's all about how quick it is. And this just the way we stew in it, and we, you know, we don't want him dead, but we know it has to happen. So, and you know, the truth is I get it. I mean, Pussy has to die. This show would be a failure if he lived.
And he knows it too. I think that's why it's so hard to watch.
Yeah, it's the juxtaposition of Tony's regret and Pussy's acceptance.
Yeah.
And
it's difficult to watch.
I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on who's not there. Christopher. Do you think that was a choice to not have Christopher on that boat?
Yes. So we learn in this episode, another moment that I really enjoy is when he tells Christopher. Who's Christopher? When he tells Christopher that he's going to get his ribbon or button.
Button.
Meaning he's going to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's not on that boat because he's not a made man.
Okay.
Now, he does have a close friendship with Pussy. But I think it's different. They grew up with Pussy. Tony, they've been friends since they were kids.
Brothers, they said. You were brothers.
So I don't think it's meant for Christopher to be there. I think that was absolutely right for the four of them to have their final. They were saying goodbye to him. I mean, they'll be the only people to mourn him, like, formally. You know, no one really knows where he is. Some people don't even know he's dead, right? Like, where they won't for a while. I don't know. They really get to mourn him. They're the only three people.
And they have that, you know, beautiful drink together, which is, you know,
heartbreaking.
There's so many times we see it because we saw them drink when Jackie died in the same manner. But now, you know, Pussy's involved. It's like when people say, like, do you want to experience your own funeral? Pussy gets to experience what his own funeral would be. And I like that it's contrast, at least in my mind, with Pussy handing Matt like Coke. You know, that sugarless motherfucker, like, that's your final drink. But Pussy gets, you know, the tequila.
Tequila, yes.
Whatever it is, yeah.
I don't love that Tony calls him out on the 26-year-old not being real.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. Was she?
I think this is not the first time she's not.
Why? I don't know if that's true.
Because Tony says it, and then Pussy kind of makes a face where he's like, I don't know. I think it means that she wasn't real.
Okay. I mean, it is a consistent lie. He's not just making that up on a whim.
No, I know.
When this season premiered, he said,
that's where I was.
With a broad 26. Like, it's pretty consistent. Again, those NBC TV shows would never be that consistent with information. They knew exactly what to say.
So the FBI gave him this alibi, right? Like, he had to be prepped. I mean, he knows his alibi of where he was. He can't mess up with these guys.
Do you think the FBI even planned it? Because Paulie does check. He says it all checks out. He was at that clinic.
The FBI was involved in that whole alibi. Absolutely.
So they're as clever as the mafia is.
Oh, yeah, of course. I, yeah, of course. Yeah. So I have a question about this scene. Did they just steal that boat, though?
Or rented it?
You think they rented that boat?
Rented it, borrowed it. Yeah. It's a great plan when you really think of it.
Oh, my God. I also really don't like when he says, don't, just not in the face, okay? Like, he hasn't put together that they're going to just throw him overboard. He knows better than that.
But he doesn't say...
So audience, I mean, we're assuming that he says not in the face so he can have an open casket and his family can mourn him. That's our assumption. And clearly, obviously, that does not happen.
Yeah, but I think he's smart enough to know that. I think it's more of a respect thing. Like, he believes his soul won't have a face. I think it's more of that. I think, you know, obviously what you're referring to is the very, very sad thing in Goodfellas when one of the main characters is killed and it's said he was shot in the head and his mother couldn't even give him an open casket. That's what I always think of whenever I hear a character.
Remind me who it
is. When Pesci's
killed. Oh, yeah. That's
in Goodfellas.
No, that's exactly what makes me think of it. When he says not the face, that's why I assume it's because of the casket.
Me too. But I don't know if it was for Goodfellas. I don't know if I'd even think that.
Right. No, I'm absolutely with you. Yeah. It's the only reason I think that. I also think during this scene, as a viewer, don't you think that maybe they just won't kill him? Because he's like, no, Tone, like, I'm giving them not real information. And there's a part of me that you think, you know, he's going to die. He knows he's going to die. You know, he gets on the boat knowing he's going to die.
Yes.
And then kind of you have hope while they're talking it out. And then just,
well, I think hope
Tony doesn't even let him
sit
down. Tony doesn't even let him sit down.
No, hope is an interesting. Well, hold on. That thought. It's, again, very similar to Matt Bevilacqua. The gunshot comes suddenly. Like, Matt's drinking, and he says the whole thing about that's the last drink you're ever going to have. And he shoots him. He waits for Pussy to shoot him. Remember we had that discussion with Becca about was it really murder? It's kind of similar. He shoots him suddenly, and then Paulie and Silvio follow. It's the Bevilacqua hit is really contrast in the kind of the demeanor and the beauty of what's happening in this, like I said, funeral. You know, I think in their mind, like, Matt's going to hell, but Pussy, I don't know, heaven, but he's going to a better place than Matt because he was their friend. And you know, I don't know. I think in a lot of ways they forgive him.
I agree with you, but I only think Syl and Tony think that, though.
Yeah, Paulie doesn't.
Paulie does not think that. I'm sorry. He thinks that you were the lowest of the low if you were a rat.
I agree with you.
And you can tell during the scene. He's kind of the only one that's kind of sticks to being mean, even though they know their friend is about to die.
Yeah.
Paulie's older than them. Do you think he was as close to Pussy as Syl and Tony are?
Probably not. Paulie was more of Johnny Soprano's age.
We have that moment where Tony and Syl go up on the deck. Syl clearly is taking it hard. Tony's taking it hard. So I think that's right. But Paulie does not have any forgiveness in his heart in this scene.
No, and that's kind of one of his character flaws, that he doesn't see humanity in people. That's kind of always his thing. It's very black and white. It's very like a child. Like we said,
juvenile. Early. And he said the first thing he said was what did he report on the calling cards? And first thing out of Paulie's mouth is, I'm not involved with that. What else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very self-centered.
Yep. So another weird thing about Paulie is that he takes all of Pussy's jewelry off. Isn't that like 101? Don't get caught with being a murderer. His jewelry?
I think so, but I think there's also something to be said about if the body's ever found, but I guess they would be able to identify him. I don't know. Maybe it's just to honor him. You take it and you do something with it.
Well, you can't really do much with it because Duh. But also, you're right, though, because if he's going to go in the water, this is horrible, but he'll, like, disintegrate, probably. And then not having his jewelry on him. I mean, but DNA with bones and stuff, I guess, but...
Well, teeth. Like, to me, teeth is always the answer, but...
And he's missing, like, but you're right. It's less obvious if he doesn't have his jewelry with him.
I always imagine that Pauly kisses the cross that he takes off, and he doesn't. But I always think he's going to.
You think he's going to kiss the cross?
Yeah, because he's Catholic, and that, again, that's what you do. Like, you get the cross, and I thought maybe he'd kiss it, and that's his way of, like, a penance for what he just did. I always think he's going to do it, and he doesn't.
No.
Do you want to talk about any other scene? I mean, it was a pretty good episode.
I love the scene where Tony and Carmela make love after she gets the mink coat.
Oh, you mean where, again, he does the husbandly duty and he gets rewarded with
yes,
with sex? Seems to be a motif.
I think that for the ending of the season for them, though, they have a very nice episode. Like, he gives her the gift. They have a beautiful scene. And then he also has his, what we think is a depressive episode in bed. We know it's food poisoning soon after that. But she's consoling him, saying, it's okay. Your children are asleep in their beds. We love you. Really nice ending for them for the season. I like them this episode.
Yeah, I always say that I love when they're friendly to each other, and I do like her taking care of him. I like that. And of course the ending, and that kind of goes into what my theme is attempt is going to be of what I think the theme of this episode is. Okay, but you said something, and I want to challenge you.
Sure.
You learn it's food poisoning. Are you sure it's food poisoning at all?
What else would it be?
I think really his brain and his body are reacting to each other. I think he's so sick to his stomach because he thinks pussy, it's finally happened. This show's all about psychotherapy. I don't think he has food poisoning at all.
No way.
I don't. I think he is just so racked with guilt and regret, and he's upset, and he knows he has to do this, and his body's reacting.
Wow.
I always assume this is not. That's why even in my description, I said alleged. I don't think.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I was like, wait, what?
I don't think he does at all.
Interesting. And they do make a big deal of, like, trying to figure out where it came from. And they never really kind of nail it down. You're on to something.
And I kind of believe that when Artie calls Pussy and, you know, Pussy says, no, I'm fine. Like,
right.
Pussy would be sick. Like, I understand not the same course, but.
They had the same food that day. Yeah, they would have both been. Interesting. Any other scenes that you loved?
I have to do a shout out to the final montage. It's great. You know, the first montage of the season that opened it with the song When I Was 17 is one of my favorite moments of the whole series. I said that, and I think you were shocked when I said that.
Yeah.
This is probably my favorite way to end a season of the whole series. Just the fact they went full circle with montage, and I love the song. The fact that you get not only the past of this whole season, but even they even go to the hotel that they took from the Hasidics. I mean, they are covering 2 years of what their crimes are. You see the stock office destroyed, and then you see Davey Scatino, which... I mean, talk about every little detail, seeing him drive away, and then finally that beautiful smoke, devilish look of Tony smoking the cigar with Carmela looking for him, which I love, how she turns the corner and looks for him because, you know, she wants to have a moment with him, but she sees him and that's all she needs, that he's there. And of course, the taking pictures of the family, which again, the last time we saw that happening, they kept saying, where's Pussy? He has to be in this picture. Ugh. And now they're not asking. It's the four so of them sad. And a family.
You're absolutely right. And I love that we know that they're taking pictures and they're all just staring at us through the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. It's so good. It's interesting that you mentioned the cigar. So you always say that that's Tony's when he's strong. I mean, he just was arrested. He made bail. They said over and over again, he said to Melfi, I'm going to get through this. The lawyer was like, okay, cool. You make bail and then you go home. What's the big deal? They have nothing on you. Tony, once again, second season in a row, ends on a high note. He is the boss. Second time.
Well, and again, and you know, maybe we're going to skip ahead a little bit because this kind of ties into my theme.
Okay.
That you're absolutely right, because I think the major theme of this episode is that a man will do anything to keep his family intact. It's so weird that you don't really see AJ and Meadow other than a few comical moments while he's farting and puking, which I really liked. But in the end, the last 5 minutes of this episode, you see what it was all for. And how season one ends.
The graduation. You know what I loved about the graduation? AJ, we think he's like kind of like a little shit, right? Even at the graduation, though, he has the camcorder and he's so proud of his sister. It's just like unapologetically. I had trouble with that for a second. They are just so happy. And I just... Yes. I really love that, and I loved AJ in that scene.
And I think that, you know, that's season one, but now I'm starting to think about season three, four, five. Let me get and then six, of course.
Yeah.
And while they all play on that, the show gets darker.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is one of the last times where, like you said, we're going to see Tony really on top without any worries.
Right.
Like, he truly goes into season three now without any worries, except his mother, who he's not really that concerned, because I think he believes Mink, the lawyer, because especially how he walks out of that therapy session.
Agreed.
I think he truly thinks, I'm good. I'm not going to worry about this.
I completely agree with you. I think Tony is on top. I like that you said no worries. He has no worries.
Hmm.
He's a Kuna... Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata. It's our problem-free philosophy. Hakuna Matata. So that, again, I'm not confident with the theme. I think, see, the interesting thing about the theme of this is that this episode is so rare that there's really only an A story. I mean, I don't even know if you can call Livia a B story.
No.
It's so minor that this is truly just one man's journey through his own psyche, entering the real world, reacting to his psyche, so on and so forth. So that's all I could really come up with as far as a theme. Like, what is overall the man trying to do? And that's why I think this. But do you have any other ideas, or do you have...
I think it's...
Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong. I think it might... I know you say that you don't like a one-word theme, so maybe we can build on this a little bit. I think it's regret.
But then what? So what is David Chase saying about regret? That's always my question. And I'm not saying you should answer that right now, but that's...
I know.
But tying in with mine, regret is okay as long as in the end you've protected your family.
Right. The reason I say regret is that clearly in his dreams, they keep saying, where's Pussy? He talks to Pussy literally as a fish. And then he makes a joke. These guys next to me are sleeping. Like, it's literally they're making their own mob jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's Tony mourning a death before it happens. I do think it was food poisoning, but I do think it's him mourning, like, the fever dreams brought on this realization and this regret.
All right, well, let's talk about our favorite quotes. And then obviously we'll get to our symbolism, because we're just going to go through the dreams, right? I mean, we've got to talk about the dream in detail. So let's have some fun and talk about our favorite quotes. Why don't you start?
A year and a half you've been writing your own gossip column? In the middle of this awful thing that he's about to kill one of his best friends. That's what he says to him. It still says this. He's amazing.
He is. I think this is the first time I've ever given Artie And the quote itself is not amazing, but the way he says it.
After an entire Indian dinner?
You ate at an Indian restaurant? There you go.
Oh, it was the muscles.
It's the snap. It's the snap of how he does it. And I just love, you know, John Vinta, whatever the hell his name is. Just his, he's always got to do something different. He's got to add the snap, the head tilt, whatever he does. And I just, I absolutely love the way he says it. I love it.
Do you know that we're considering getting a cat? And we're going to, yeah, we talk about it like every other day, but we haven't acted on it. I can't get over like the poop in my house.
Hmm.
But
it's maybe, not easy.
No, but maybe I'll get there one day, but we're going to name the cat Artie Bucco.
Oh, either you're going to name a pussy.
No, that's like a little too. That's a little too. No.
On the nose.
A little on the nose. A little on the nose.
Do you have any honorable mentions? Because I know you never can last for
I have one. When Tony says to the FBI, another picture of me for your wallet, when after they arrest him, I think that was brilliantly delivered. Amazing.
I have to shout out one too, only because the fact who he says it to. So he's sick, obviously, whatever the reason is. He comes, he meets Angie Pompancero, and he goes, how you feeling?
Good. How are you?
I'm on my poor ass.
Really? To Angie Pompancero? It was just, he truly felt he needed that sympathy, and I just absolutely loved that delivery and that line. So those are mine. But let's get down to it. Let's talk about the symbolism, yeah, and let's try this episode to keep this under 7 hours. Let's try to keep it under 7 hours.
Do we agree that this is the episode? Symbolism is this whole episode.
Correct.
Let's go. Livia insists Tony eats eggplant, and he says he's not hungry.
Nice catch.
Opening scene.
Nice catch, but I'm going to top your egg.
Oh,
I see your egg, and I'm gonna top it, and I raise you consomme soup,
which I've never heard of.
Which, like, he doesn't eat.
What is that? Do you know what that is?
It is a very thin, light soup. It's a very good soup.
You've had it?
I don't know if I've ever had it. I just know what it is. But it is a light broth, so it's not too heavy for him. But the reason it's a light broth is because egg whites are used in it to remove all the fat from the broth. So she's giving him soup with egg in it, and he doesn't eat it. It's him not eating the eggs.
I love
that are making this go through. When are we going to tell people? Have people figured it out yet?
I no. But maybe. Good for you if you did.
No, okay.
That's on them.
We are getting to a point, though, where I think eventually people are going to, like, we can't talk about it without saying what it means. But we'll get there. I'll let you have 2 seasons where I don't spoil the egg symbolism.
I'll protect everybody from spoilers. So after Carm and Tony are with the mink, the scene cuts to saltwater taffy behind Tony's head on the boardwalk. A cannoli for Pussy's death. That we can now say.
Why is saltwater taffy?
He's going to throw him in saltwater.
Oh, okay. No, you're right. I'm sorry.
It's like really in your face when it happens.
Oh, no. I know exactly what you're talking about. That's even more than Tilly is. And Tilly's pretty prominent, but you're right. Saltwater taffy really is the first indication that you're maybe not at Asbury Park, but that you're
at the boardwalk,
at a big boardwalk. Like, you're at Atlantic City boardwalk. You're not just at like some random rinky dink boardwalk.
hold on a second. I think rinky dink boardwalks also have saltwater taffy.
Yeah, but the way it's so prominent, I think that sign is huge.
You hate saltwater taffy.
I do.
I love it.
I do. I don't understand it. I don't understand. I think it reminds me of tofu, and I know it's not like tofu, but I don't know. I don't like it.
Okay. Go ahead.
The sounds in the background of the dream. It's funny. Now, I know that it's the creaking of the boat. I'm smart enough to know that. But I also get the sound of someone walking through a funhouse. that creaky, we don't know where we're going. He literally, his dream is a funhouse, and it's unbelievable.
It's so good. So Tony is now working with Indians, right? This is a new business we're excited about.
Okay. Don't know where you're going with this, but okay.
And in his dreams, they say he's going to burn himself, and then he douses himself with gasoline and is essentially, he wakes up because he burned himself.
You're right.
And Hesh says something kind of alluding to it being honorable. And I know this is a problem. This is not like a good thing in India, but it is a connection with Tony's dream. It's the bride burning.
Yeah.
And then they already then mentions how Gandhi is burned and cremated. So I kind of thought I was stretching it, honestly, at first, and then already said that. And I went, oh, maybe I'm not stretching it. It's a weird tie-in with like Tony's psyche, because he knows he's doing business, and it's really interesting.
But it's honorable. It's an excuse for him to know what I'm doing is honorable.
Right. But yet it's not good. Right. I mean, it's.
Nope. But he says, now they don't say cancer, but I think we all kind of assume that's what Tony has in the dream.
The way they talk, yeah.
And but he's getting rid of the cancer. Pussy is the cancer. And he knows that the only way to do it is to burn it out, radiation, whatever you want to say. But then, of course, there's that question of, well, what if you're wrong?
Oh, I know.
Too late. What if we find out pussy was not doing this? Why he needs that confession.
Right. I was just going to say, I mean, he sees the wire. That is tough.
Underneath the cigars, which symbolize strength.
Oh, man. Yeah. Really rough. It's hard, but go ahead.
What do you think of Tony shooting Pauly in the dream? I have my thoughts, but what are your thoughts on Tony shooting Pauly?
I think Pauly needs to know he needs to shoot a friend, and I think dreams are weird. Like, I don't think it means he wants to shoot Pauly or he thinks Pauly's a rat. I think it's just kind of when you have weird dreams and it kind of makes sense, but then you're like, why did that happen in the dream? I think it was just one of those weird things.
I agree. I think it's just more of he has to kill a friend. But there is that little bit of question. Not that he thinks Pauly's a rat. I'm not saying that. But in the grand scheme of things, if he had to kill somebody, I don't think he'd rather kill Pauly. But that's how far Pussy is away from the list of people he'd want to kill.
Agreed.
Like, yeah. I'd sooner kill Pauly than kill Pussy. And I think that's really why Pauly's the victim of the dream.
Agreed. I agree.
Pauly's annoying. Pussy's not annoying.
No, Pauly's annoying.
He's truly a friend to Tony. Tony loves him.
I think Pauly's also a friend to Tony. But you're right. Yeah. Not like Pussy. I think Pussy's definitely ranked higher in the friend. Like in Tony's top eight on MySpace, it's going to be... It's like Pauly's Pussy's first, and then Pauly might be like eight. In the dream, Tony asks where Pussy is, what, twice?
Yes.
And then
says, I have Pussy on the brain. I always do. And there's definitely that, obviously it's a double entendre, but what we don't know what Pussy he's talking about.
Right. In that moment, right. You don't know which one he's talking about.
Though the closed captions have a lowercase p.
Interesting. So you're right.
So the script must have had a lowercase p.
Interesting.
But I interpret that as we don't know what he's talking
about. It's a gray area.
I think it's interesting that Artie says that Tony is green around the gills.
Yeah, a fish reference.
Because Tony's not the fish. But Artie throws that in.
It's fishy. The whole episode's a little fishy.
It's fishy. It's a little fishy.
Melfi, who is Melfi in that scene? Is that the Annalisa?
Yeah.
Okay. I had a moment where I'm like, I think that's her, but I can't be sure.
Yep.
That's an interesting dream.
It is, but he says that Annalise reminded him of Melfi because, you know, he doesn't see Melfi in that episode, but he has therapy with Annalise.
Annalisa, but yes.
Annalisa, sorry. And Annalisa, again, he doesn't sleep with her because he doesn't. Well, he says it's because of business, but he doesn't sleep with Melfi. So he doesn't want to sleep with Annalisa because of who he associates her with. And it, by the way, it's
but
not
then
the
he
only
has, time. But then he sleeps with Melfi in the dream.
But he also sleeps with Annalisa in a dream.
He does. You're absolutely right. But also, I think that this is the show, season two. I think this was like a throw to the fans.
Sure. Absolutely. Can you imagine how much fun they must have had filming that scene with a giant dick in his pants?
Oh, my God. How did they not laugh?
Those two must have had so much fun.
I think that was just like throwing a bone to the audience. Like, let them have sex in a dream because like everyone wants to see it. Like that type of thing.
You know, I don't know. I'm throwing this out there. I'm sure you could look on YouTube. But I wonder if after the Richie Stead episode, when they did the coming attractions, did they throw in just a moment of them on the desk just to get the audience going? Oh, it's going to fucking happen.
You had to. They had to.
I bet they did. I bet they did. It's not the first. It's not the last time we will see Melfi become someone else.
Yeah. This is
in a dream.
Cannoli.
It is. Yeah, that's a little cannoli. I also even love, and that's exactly how dreams are, when you hear Melfi's voice come out of Annalise's. I've had that. I've had that dream.
It's a thing. Know, yeah.
It's probably the greatest dream sequence, at least of the show so far and of all time, because, and I'm talking all shows. I mean, no show gets dreams like this. This is how dreams feel to me. Going from room to room, not knowing if I'm awake or not. People all of a sudden changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you have any recurring dreams? Like, do you have like a dream that,
yeah, I have a dream. This is crazy. And I know exactly what it means and it's fine. I have a recurring dream that it's the first day of high school and I do not have my schedule and I cannot get into my locker. And all I'm trying to do is get to class and I don't know what my classes are or where they are in the, like what classroom they're in.
Wow. And what does it mean?
I think it's like stress of getting stuff done, which is like totally my life. Yeah. I mean, I'm not like stressed about getting stuff done, but all the time, but that fits my type A.
I often have dreams where someone we love dies.
What?
And I'm the only one that cares.
Oh my God. That's horrible.
I have them often.
That's horrible.
And everyone's like, so what? It's okay. And I'm the only one that's like, why do you not care about this?
Have you ever looked up what it meant?
I don't want to know what that means.
Okay.
Yeah, but I do. I'd say once a year. Once a year I have a dream like that.
I would have to say mine like twice a year. Like I'll wake up and be like, oh my God, I had that thing again where I just couldn't get somewhere I needed to go.
Hmm. I'm sure I've had that kind of dream too, but I can't remember it being high school. I know I've done the whole I'm back in a play I did years ago and they're just like, go. And I'm like, I haven't rehearsed.
I've done this play in 20 years. Yeah. Okay.
And they're like, go on stage. But anyway.
So the recurring dream specifically happens with the classes, but the feeling of trying to get somewhere and I just can't get there is a thing. But I specifically had it happen on the first day of school multiple times.
Okay. Little meta symbolism to move on. I love that he sings the theme to Gilligan's Island. Just, you know, I mean, obviously it's because he's going to be on a boat.
Yep.
But it's it's a TV show. It's just a reminder. You're just watching a TV show.
So the boat, when they're on the boat, makes us wonder if it's a dream because it's swaying back and forth and you hear the creaking because they're on the boat now. And I had a moment of, I mean, okay, listen, I know it's real because I saw it already, but I did have a moment of this looks like it could be another one of his dreams. And you question if it's real.
By the way, shot on a soundstage. They had to make the camera do that.
No.
The boat is real, obviously, when they're outside, when Syl and Tony, but the scene where they shoot him is on a soundstage.
Okay, why?
I don't know. Can you imagine trying to fit camera shit in a boat? Boats are small.
With four large men in a tiny
boat. Yeah, no, I bet that's why. So all that back and forth, that had to be done.
Wow.
I don't know if it's post-recording, if some assholes waving the camera back and forth. I have no idea how any of that works, but I just know that it was not done on a boat.
Wow.
When Pussy yells, "Give me a minute," to his wife, this is when they come and get him. He's framed in the mirror, kind of like just like with Janice. We finally see the two sides of Pussy merging together.
Yeah.
And we know that, you know, he's done. He's getting framed. Again, going back, probably one of the few symbolisms that truly, I think, proves my argument for theme is that final part. So we get the fish talking, which I don't even think we can talk about the symbolism. I mean, it's a fish. It's Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. They're sleeping. It's heavy handed. There's no doubt about it. I think it's supposed to. There's also even that the guys are on the side. So it's almost like a Christ figure thing. The two guys beside me.
Yeah.
Interesting. But what I was going to say is the final scene is him with his family in a very Leave It to Beaver, father knows best scene, not like the normal dinner scenes we see there. And because in his dream, he killed Pussy by knocking the fish over. So now he can have this fun time with his family.
Because
he's protected them. It's also worth mentioning that Meadow is going to Columbia. I do think perhaps it's a little bit of a flaw, dare I say, that he learned about his daughter's... We learned of Meadow's choice for college through a dream.
Completely agree with you. I thought that was a little odd. It's almost like she told him already, maybe. Like he knew already, maybe. And then in the dream she says it. But yeah,
maybe.
Plot twist or spoiler alert. Meadow's going to Columbia.
Since we are accepting, and I think the whole world has accepted, but I'm sure there's a couple people on some Reddit thread that are pissed off, that basically Tony learns from a fish in his dream that Pussy's a rat. But I can accept that because it's his self-conscious and I get it. He does prove it to himself later.
Yeah, I was going to say, disagree. I think that is he's always suspected it. And then he finally sees the wire and that's what sets him off. I don't think the fish.
Of course, because we're very intelligent people and we know how to look at a TV show. But I think to expect an audience to accept that in the year 2000, because we take this for granted. That kind of writing was deep and new. But let's say we accept it. But then to throw in, oh, and by the way, we're also going to find out Meadow's college through a dream, I think it was too much. That's my point. I just think they pushed the envelope.
Tony says, poor me, during his session with Melfi, kind of like Livia's poor you.
Oh, it's not kind of. It's exactly like it.
Brilliant.
Meadow saying, I'll cut them off.
If you ever wanted to talk.
This is who Dad is. My friends don't judge me. And fuck them if they do. I'll cut them off.
She's really becoming her father. Her father just cut off Pussy. And she says, I'll cut off my friends.
I think that scene, Meadows, that was her finale of this season. Mm-hmm. And kind of like we knew Janice was back in The Sopranos, like she kept changing her name. She wore the colors. Clearly, I mean, she committed murder. I mean, she is a soprano. Meadow has her moment where I am with this family. Mm-hmm. Everyone else can go to hell. And I love that season finale for Meadow.
And what's really great, and I think if you had to pick a Meadow's best season, it will be 3. Because 3 is going to challenge her a little bit as far as what her role is as the daughter of Tony Soprano.
Okay.
I think if there's a season I would say she deserved Emmy recognition, it would be that season.
Well, then this definitely queued her up for that.
Yes.
That scene in her bedroom was incredible. So Melfi becomes the voice of the audience when she says, maybe I should have seen this clearer or sooner. Mm-hmm. She becomes the audience and talks to Tony. Maybe we should have all seen this sooner. Because
that scene, what? That he was going to kill Pussy?
Yeah. Huh.
See, I don't know if I agree with you because no, I do agree that that definitely is an audience, a voice of the mm-hmm. audience. But this raises an interesting question. Do you remember when you knew Pussy had to die?
The second I knew he was with the FBI.
So it doesn't become clearer for the audience.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Maybe there were people out there that were shocked. I agree with you. The moment Pussy comes back and we learn, you know, when Skip picks him up at the...
Yeah, it's like he has to die. I just don't know when he's going to die.
Would you have been okay? Last episode I asked you if the Richie's death was the season finale. Would you have been okay? Now knowing, would you really have been okay with Pussy's still being alive into season 3?
Yeah, because I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. I would think that was a very good season finale. Richie died. It was in a shocking fashion. Cool. And then Pussy's storyline continues. No, I think I wouldn't have missed this, but I mean, knowing what I know now, I don't think they compare. I know that we said this in our last recording and I just watched it just now. And I just think it's one of the greatest things.
Is this the first time you watched it and jumped onto the pod with me?
Yes.
Yeah, I've never done that. Watched it and jumped with you.
Okay, maybe early, but not recently.
Okay. My last one is just a little literary reference. I mean, Davies Catino is Georgian of Mice and Men. I mean, and he's even talking to Tony, who's a big, burly guy, like a Lenny figure mm-hmm. type.
Because he's going to work on a ranch, you mean?
He's going to work on the ranch and, you know. And I do also love Tony's line of Vegas.
He sends him off and it's kind of like, dude, you're never going to learn. And that's it. That's the end of Davies Catino.
And we learn that Eric's going to a state school. Not that there's anything wrong with going to a state school. You did, and you're a failure. But you... not that there's anything wrong with it, but, you know, he wanted to go to Georgetown. You know, and that's one of the best colleges in the country. And
yeah, it hurts, for sure. It hurts. He got into Georgetown, and we had the money to send him. And because of me... he's not going to Georgetown. I don't think it's the state school. I think it's more like not Georgetown. That's the dig. I wonder if he's going to TCNJ.
He's going to Rutgers.
How do you know that?
We'll learn in season 3.
Wow. Proud of you.
Thanks.
I mean, Rutgers is also an amazing school.
It's a throwaway line, but we learn how he's doing at Rutgers too.
Okay. I can't wait to hear about him. So, Joseph, what does the title mean?
I mean, everything about this episode is like being in a funhouse. Not just the dream. You know, little details. Even the way I thought it was funny, Patsy, who we just met.
Yeah.
You know, Spoons' twin brother.
I say Patsy's back. That's not true. The actor is back.
The actor's back. Which, by the way, I was wrong. Because when Spoons died, I said that we wouldn't see
Patsy
until season 3, and I was wrong. We saw him in this episode.
I love when you're wrong.
I know you do. That's why I brought it up.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
But Patsy's reaction when he comes in with the coat and Tony scolds him, his over hyperbolized movements even seem like he's a mime. Say something. He points to him. He's like, who, me? What the fuck is wrong with you?
You mean this mink coat?
I would love to play a sound clip, but there is no sound clip with Marcel Marceau, who plays him. Doesn't say anything. So it just very weird. And then, of course, I mean, Asbury, which we really haven't talked about, this other character in the episode, Asbury Park, which we should talk about. Was famous for its amusement park when Tony was a kid and when everything was peaceful, when everything was better. Mm-hmm. What is your relationship with Asbury Park? I'm actually not. I don't have a big relationship with Asbury Park.
We had a different boardwalk. We went to Point or Seaside. That's not the boardwalk that I'm tied to. I mean, I know the big face and Tilly, right? Is that his name?
Tilly.
Yeah. I mean, I know Asbury Park, but no, I don't have personal ties to it. I mean, as soon as you see it, I know it's Asbury Park. I've been there. But my childhood memories are at Point Pleasant.
Yeah, I don't really have anything either. I do know this, though. It's interesting that it was, I don't register it, if that's the right word, but as a historical landmark of New Jersey. So it wasn't allowed to be destroyed.
Yeah.
But in 2004, it was taken down. Like, there were parts destroyed against the law. I don't know if it was
really
sanctioned or not. But yeah, in 2004, they took, I think there were rides. And they're gone. Like, if you go to Asbury Park now,
oh, that's you sad. Don't.
Yeah.
Also,
the meta aspect of Silvio, played by Steven Van Zandt, whose first album was, what is it, Live from Asbury Park? Songs of Asbury Park. It's Springsteen's first album is an homage to Asbury Park.
Okay, I'm about to say something and we're going to lose listeners right now. Are you ready?
Oh, here we go.
I don't like Bruce Springsteen.
Neither do I. Why do you have to say that?
Wait, and neither do our cousins. And we all figured it out kind of like recently. We all admitted it to each other and we all agreed.
In our group therapy session, we all let out our demons.
Text. Yeah, the Steph Akelli text.
Do you know how honestly I figured it out? I had this dream and I kept vomiting. And I knew that was me purging my feelings towards Springsteen.
Oh, it wasn't because dreaming. He sounds like he's throwing up in every song?
Wow. No, seriously.
No, really. Maybe you need to cut that because that's rough. I just really never understood. I'm so sorry, everybody. I know I'm wrong. Like, I'm aware. And I'm okay with it, though. I feel really strongly about it.
Oh.
I'm comfortable in my incorrectness. Carmella says, the fun never stops.
Yeah, I like that little throw out. And I also think that was dubbed in later. Because really? That didn't match the tone. I think I think that line is dubbed in.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think.
Cool.
Most valuable Goomba.
It has to be Tony.
AJ. Oh. No, it has to be Tony. Beautiful episode. That's it. I mean, I don't even really have anything to say.
I mean, a runner up is Pussy, but like, no. It's Tony.
Yeah, it's not.
If we pulled this shit or something that made us go, oh my God, that's us.
I could really see Dad doing the hair on the suit thing. But more importantly, I could see Mom not giving a shit. Yeah, I could see Mom be like, will you leave me? Leave me the fuck alone. Like, I'm
literally in the middle of something. Can you leave?
Right. But did you ever want a mink coat? Is that something you've wanted?
So I struggle with killing animals for the... Like, I wear leather and stuff, but, like, I think it's too in my face. Like, a bunch of little tiny cute minks had to die for me to wear this coat, and I don't think I could wear a mink big coat like that with being... Okay. With, like, yeah.
Sorry. That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. Just can't.
But,
yeah.
But could you agree with them having that conversation? Like, I could totally see that happening. Whether it's Our parents, or a ring, or something, making a joke.
I mean, remember the Christmas that Peaches wore a necklace?
Yes.
Remember that Christmas? And we kept being like, hey, Mom, look at Peaches. And she's like, yeah, she's so cute. And we're like, no, Mom, look at Peaches. And she was probably doing something and not being like, I think this happened. And we're like, look at the dog. Look at the dog.
I chuckled at the line, there better be Coke in the fridge, because... As if AJ was supposed to predict that his father was going to be vomiting, but that's something our mother would do.
Yeah.
There better be fucking Coke in the fridge.
Hold on a second. She would never say that. She would say there better be Coke in the fridge.
What did I say? I had a fucking...
You said that. I don't think she'd say that to us like that.
But I'm sorry, Mom.
We would, like, the spirit of that would be there. I agree.
Yes. I have a theory that I think this episode holds very well.
Okay.
That all nationalities have a little bit of hatred for other nationalities' foods. And there's a clear sense of racism in this episode about the Indian eating food. at an Indian restaurant.
Your father is sick.
Oh my God, Daddy. What happened?
He went to an Indian restaurant.
That is so racist.
She's like, that's a race. I'm like, I was like, yeah, that's a little racist. Yeah.
It is racist, but I think people have it about us too, though. Like, I'm sure there are some people
that are like, oh, India that Italian like, restaurant. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, you ate in an Italian restaurant. Don't you know what they do to the veal?
Overall.
Yeah, you have one? I've been spitting them out. You have one?
I think it's really bad that Meadow and her friends walk in as he's getting arrested. And I know that we learn that Meadow does not care and is like, screw them. But I think it's really embarrassing.
Were you embarrassed that time?
That's messed up.
No, it's awful.
He's kidding, everybody. The sarcasm goes on many different layers sometimes, and I feel like we need to, like, clarify.
But I really liked Carmela's approach to it. Like, I'm going to talk to you, and she kind of scolds her by the way she reacts, but doesn't. She's like, the way you acted down there, she more questions, like, do you understand? I get that you're upset, but do you get it? And that's when Meadow finally says what you loved.
Yeah. She's like, no, I'm just not the daughter. I'm here. I love it.
And I'll throw one more thing out. Tony being sick, you know, vomiting, farting. And he says, I don't want you to see me like this. And he says it over dramatically, you know, like as if he's dying. Mm-hmm. But I get that. I don't like people to see when I'm sick. Like, if Carolyn ever walked in, like, are you okay? I'm going to, like I don't want to metaphorically have my hair held back while I vomit. Leave me alone. Let me vomit. Let me fart. Let me shit. Let me do everything I got to do. And then I'll be better. I totally got what he said. I feel like you're weak. I don't want people to see me like that.
Interesting.
I think your memory remembers. And I think, like, Carolyn will always remember that weak moment of Joe when he's
vomiting. I don't
think
it's weak if you're sick.
I know I'm wrong. I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm saying I relate to Tony on this. I get it.
Okay.
We are stretching this episode. We hope everyone's loving it.
Yeah, it's a big episode, guys.
This is a big episode, guys.
This is
cannolis.
Huge. We've been waiting.
We promise not to go through every single time that they foreshadowed Pussy Seth.
A lot of them, though. Wait, here's the thing, though. I feel like we did this podcast so we could talk about this episode.
It was one of the times. Yes.
Yeah. So let us be here. Cannolis.
You go first. Let's jump back and forth.
Okay. So there's a lot of cannolis within the episode, and a lot of them have to do with fish. So I'll just put that there. Fish in the Indian restaurant. They're eating fish in the opening scene when Pussy's there.
Yeah, you literally see with the great intro to Through and Through by the Rolling Stones. And you see in that same frame, also even Gandolfini's face, he sees the fish. And though his face is not facing the camera, we know he has a reaction. Like, that's it. That's the moment he goes, shit, Pussy's a rat. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, the acting in that scene.
Agreed. And Pussy, furthermore, when they go to Vesuvio's, Pussy adds Zuppa de Mussels to the order, more fish. So he adds more fish to their order.
Good call. So this is kind of a big one. After the Indian restaurant, Pussy and Tony enter together into Vesuvio's, and Tony twirls Adriana. You know, very fatherly, like, friend, you know, cute, uncle, nothing dirty.
Oh, no.
But she's wearing red, and not just red. She sticks out. And then she's also driving the car in the dream in that little car. Mm-hmm.
A clown like a car, which car. Is a funhousey type thing.
There you go. I didn't even catch that. Mm-hmm. And it's also the same color red.
There is a scene, I believe, in the first season where they're outside the club and she is in red as well.
Yes.
So we see this multiple times.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean much outside the club.
Agreed. It now probably means more. Yes. So Syl says in the dream, our true enemy has yet to reveal himself. And Syl has, and Tony in the dream laughs because it's funny when Syl does the impersonations, right? But Syl says this before in real life. And we called that a cannoli. So that was just another cannoli to go, Pussy's about to reveal himself as our true enemy.
Yes, in two things. One, Syl is wearing the exact outfit Pacino's wearing in The Godfather 3 when he says it.
Amazing.
Two, to show the audience how much you control me and nag me, the cannoli I wanted to say, back in that episode where he first says it, we recorded me saying the following. That he says, our true enemy is yet to reveal himself. And then I added, he cuts to Pussy.
Yeah,
and you couldn't said, have said that. You can't say that because then the she has the reins on me, guys.
Listen, it's awful. Hey, we have listeners who are watching this for the first time.
Well, you all should have known Pussy was going to die. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
But anyway, it's true. It in the scene where he first says it, literally cuts
it right cuts to right to him. Absolutely. No. I know at this point we kind of know that Pussy's going to die, but Syl drinking on the way to the boat, offering some to Pussy. Then they're drinking tequila. Like, I think that's just a cannoli that he totally knows they're about to kill Pussy, even if we haven't quite grasped that they're about to do it. In the car, you're looking at me like,
I know exactly.
He drinks from the flask. Yeah. And I think that's a little cannoli. Like, get ready, everybody.
Another cut right to Pussy is when Tony says, all my enemies are smoked.
Mm-hmm.
It's right like to. Fish? So not only like fish, and it cuts right to Pussy. So there you go. Junior makes one little appearance. Although he makes an appearance at the graduation, yes. Which great. It's there. But in the dream, mm-hmm. I really like that he is in the window, very much an allusion to Oswald shooting Kennedy from the book depository, mm-hmm. Which is not the only time that Junior is going to be connected to the Kennedy assassination.
What? Really?
Oddly enough. Yeah, that gets brought up. Yeah. I can't really explain without you getting mad at me. And then finally, big one, there's literally, and I never noticed it until doing this, there is a line that said, life is a big nothing, everything's black. I had to pause it and settle back. I couldn't believe that line.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that line.
Okay, I'm without saying what it is, and if audience, if you know, you know. Do you really think that that was a on purpose cannoli?
No, but people who analyze this show as much as we do seem to cite something that happens in the series as evidence of something else. And again, audience, if you know, you know. And if you don't, just bear
we'll
with us.
We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there.
I've never heard that cited. How do you not cite that moment as evidence for one thing or the other?
I got
other?
You. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well,
it's
we're
so
the
much
first.
Better.
Here we go.
Here we go. We did it. I can feel our ratings shooting up.
When is Michael Imperioli going to come on our podcast?
I put in a call to him.
You did?
I put in a call.
Did you go out
for lunch? Season three. Yeah. Season three. He'll be in. All right, we got to wrap this up. You got anything else before
yeah,
we?
Yeah, sorry. Actually, you know what? I'm not, because this brings me joy. Or anything else? Okay, I'm just gonna go down my list.
You're gonna spit
them out.
I'm going for it.
Go. I had a moment when I thought that the payphone was a little outdated. You know, when the guy talks to the guy at the payphone.
Nope,
it's not. It's very much a thing in 2000. You were still in high school.
And I made many a phone call, many a collect call.
Yes, you did.
Where you just said, come pick me up at 10. And then when dad got the collect call, you have a call from pick me up at 10. And he hung up.
Yep.
It's done.
Him calling Artie Prince Rogaine is, that's, come on. That's, you it kind of reminds us that they're really good friends too. You can't say that to someone unless you're super good friends with them. And he laughs.
But even again, Artie's reaction, he pauses and stops and stares at him. Like, he's so good at physical comedy.
He's they're all so talented.
John Ventimiglia, right? He's brilliant in the show.
Okay, so them in the mink coat when they do make love, it actually like made me tear up. Wow. It's a very, very cute. Okay. And like I said, it's a good ending to their season. Tony's makeup when he goes to Pussy's house, they're in his room. His makeup, like that person deserves an award. Because he looks like a person who was super sick and is still sick, but is okay to be there. Like the makeup is incredible.
Yes.
Incredible. It almost looks like, okay, so the angle at Pussy's house when they're at the dinner table, it's Pussy's wife, Syl, and Tony waiting. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Pussy, his wife, and Polly are waiting for Tony, who's upstairs.
Syl.
Sorry.
It's a bird's eye view, yeah.
Okay, I had a moment where I thought, oh, my God, do they have his house bugged? Where I thought we were watching them through a camera, and it was just a weird camera angle.
Oh, that's interesting. I just think that's supposed to tell us that not that Tony's literally watching, but that we're following Tony's story. And since he's up there.
Sure. I think I'm going to adopt the word picayune into my vocabulary.
What does it mean?
It means like worthless or like little. But when Pussy says it, it's like, oh, the information I gave them, it was picayune. I love that.
I can't wait for you to use that at the next party.
You ready? Watch out. Here I come. I love when Tony promotes Christopher. I think that's a really good feel-good scene. It's after the graduation. And he even says, you know, it's graduation day. And Christopher gets a little moment. I really, really enjoy that.
You love yourself some Christopher.
I do. Everything about him and Nate. I really love them. I love them.
So I have just a few things and then we'll wrap up. But this episode is the first reference to Aunt Quinn, who is the mother of Tony Blundetto, a character we will meet in season 5, a great character. Mm-hmm. I also am amazed. It's not the same actress, but I mean, dead on accurate. Like I actually watched it and said to myself, well, I'm impressed. It's the same actress. But then I thought, let me make sure. And thank God I did. I was ready to say to our audience, that's the same actress who's not going to appear for 3 more seasons. Mm. It's not. It's unbelievable.
Nice.
And she even aged well. Like the next actress looks like she would be that much older.
Wow.
Than now. I thought it was fantastic. I love that Pussy says President Franklin is my best friend, my referring to the money, and skip that. Like
Lipari just didn't say anything. He didn't even make a face.
Doesn't even make it because he probably thinks Ben Franklin was a president.
Stop. No, he stop.
Is Cusimano the worst character on this show?
Dude.
How many fucking times are you going to check your fucking watch
while you're
checking
on a Tony. neighbor and someone who's meant, I don't want to say they're friends, but a neighbor that you're like, hi, I live next door to you. I care about you.
It makes me hate Robert Lapone more than people hate Patty Lapone.
I'm sorry.
That's a lot of hate.
That's her brother.
That's Robert.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Not only who plays famous for playing Cusimano, but also the original Zach in A Chorus Line.
Wow.
He's the voice you hear when you start the album of A Chorus Line.
Let's do the whole combination facing away from the mirror. From the top. A 5, 6, 7, 8.
I'm not a big fish eater. I eat salmon and I like basically buy that at Trader Joe's. Is $4 a pound a lot?
I have no idea.
It seems like a lot.
I think it's a lot.
Okay.
This past weekend, Jacqueline's mom made mussels. And you know how I feel about her muscles, and they were so good.
Well, shout out to Jean. Great job.
Honestly, just the best.
We need to talk about the Emmys. We talked about the Emmy Awards of this year a few episodes ago to talk about Adriana. Here are the nominees for Best Supporting Actor in a Drama Series of that year. John Spencer, The West Wing. Great actor. Beautiful season. Steve Harris, The Practice. Loved The Practice. Great show. Deserved a nomination. Dominic Chianese, The Sopranos. Great. Well-deserved. Michael Badalucci, The Practice. Did not deserve a nomination. Never did. And the winner that year was Richard Schiff for The West Wing. Okay. Richard Schiff is wonderful, but we could have... In fact, I'll even take that as a win. Give him the win. We could take Michael Badaluccio, who's really just a fat guy, fat Italian guy, and we could have put in our fat Italian guy, Vincent Pastore. How does he not get a nomination for this season? I think it's a crime that he wasn't nominated. This show was just not getting recognized the way it should have been.
But okay, here's the thing though. It's season two, and I know that it's incredible. And the episode we just had, I'm still shook about how good it was. Maybe people didn't know yet that it was going to be what it is.
Would you like to know what season of The West Wing this was?
Oh, no.
The first.
Oh, no.
And it won Best Drama. The first season of The West Wing beat the second season of...
That's wrong.
The Sopranos.
That's incorrect.
Yeah. It's a problem.
That's incorrect.
But anyway, I thought it was an interesting... I didn't know really where to put this, but that Pussy brags about performing oral sex when it was a sign of weakness in season one. And I don't think that's an inconsistency. I think that's purposeful.
Yeah. It's like almost awkward.
It almost felt like though it was like when we're all among the men, we can talk about it. Like we're close enough friends that we can admit that this is a thing. Because Carmella in that episode calls out Tony.
Yeah.
Like you're a bunch of hypocrites.
Yeah.
But I thought it was one of the kind of kind moments of like, oh my God, you trust these guys and you love each other enough to show this vulnerability.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, just really nice. And then followed by the slowness of them taking out their guns that's the most painful. He's watching them take their guns out so slowly.
And he says, I have to sit down.
Yeah.
And they don't let him. And it's painful.
Lots of beautiful moments at the end of this season to bring us into season three. They take advantage of every second. And I am so excited about season three. But I think we need a break. What do you think, Sarah? When should we bring back season three of The Sibling Sit Down?
We're going to take a little summer hiatus. So you'll hear from us next on Monday, September 11th. So about a month. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for analyzing Funhouse with us and listening to us for our season finale of season two. Really excited to start season three with you. So we will be back in September with season three's premiere, Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood.
So that means you have a month to get your friends and families who haven't seen The Sopranos all caught up and join us for season three.
Nice. Nice. That will be exciting. So this has been The Sibling Sit Down. Ba-da-da-da-da-da.
See you in September.
See you in September. See you when the summer's through.
Thanks for listening to The Sibling Sit Down. Please remember to like or follow the show on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. So you never forget about it.